Well, good evening and welcome to this evening's Monroe City Council meeting for May 15, 2012. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Edie, if you would, roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary?
Here.
Cutterback?
Here.
Williams?
Here.
Camp?
Present.
Davis?
I'm present.
Gamble?
Here.
Hanford?
Present.
Please join me for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm going to switch the order here in terms of the first two portions of the agenda this evening, and move right into the proclamation for the 8th Annual Traditional Powwow. And Marcia, if you'd like to step forward and bring your kids, that would be great. Marge, before I read the proclamation, is there anything that you'd like to say?
I just want to thank you all for giving us this proclamation every year. This will be our 8th annual powwow. It's a community-wide powwow, and everyone is invited to be a part of it. It's a free event, and we serve dinner, and there's powwow dancing and drumming.
You have some guests here that...
Yes. Yeah, is this working?
Yeah,
it is. I'm Elijah Stevenson. I'm 13. I go to Sky Valley Education Center. I'd like to invite you all to our 8th annual powwow at Monroe High School. It's going to be a lot of fun, so hope to see you guys all there.
This is Alexis, and she is 8. Well, she'll be 8 on Saturday, and she is from the Thlinkit and Eskimo tribe of Alaska.
Hello, good evening. Welcome.
And then this is her sister, Morgan. Can you tell them how old you are, Morgan?
How old are you?
Four.
Same tribes.
Good evening, welcome, Morgan.
This is Nevaeh. She's from the Turtle Mountain Chippewa.
Good evening. Welcome.
I'm Tanya Salvador. I'm from the Pueblo Tribe in New Mexico City. I'm 9 years old, and I hope you all can be here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Well, thank you for introducing yourself. And so with that, I'm pleased to be able to read the proclamation this evening recognizing the 8th Annual Traditional Powwow. Whereas the Skykomish Valley Indian Education is sponsoring a unique ceremony on May 26, 2012 entitled 8th Annual Traditional Powwow. And whereas the Skykomish Valley Indian Education Program plays a vital role to promote culture awareness and self-knowledge, present a correct historical perspective, and whereas the Skykomish Valley Indian Education Program encourages self-esteem of Native American students and encourages academic excellence, and whereas it is essential that all citizens of the City of Monroe be aware of the importance of Indian education programs and encourage all educational and health organizations to take advantage of free informational spaces in the City of Monroe, and whereas partnerships, awareness, and cooperation are important themes of the traditional powwow, now therefore I, Mayor Robert G. Zimmerman, do hereby call upon all citizens of the City of Monroe and the Skykomish Valley Indian Education in supporting the 8th Annual Traditional Powwow. And with that, I'd like to present the official proclamation. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Also this week, we are recognizing our Public Works Department and the exceptional job that they do, and so I have a proclamation to read on behalf of Public Works for Public Works Week. So City of Monroe Proclamation Public Works Week. Whereas public works, infrastructure, facilities, and services are of vital importance to the health, safety, and well-being of the people of the City of Monroe, and whereas the support of an understanding and informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as water, sewers, streets, storm drainage, and public buildings, and whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities, as well as their planning, design, and construction, is vitally dependent upon the efforts and skills of public workers and officials, and whereas the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff the City of Monroe Public Works Department perform an important public service, now therefore, I do hereby proclaim the week of May 20th through 26th, 2012, as Public Works Week in the City of Monroe. I call upon all citizens and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize the contributions which public works employees make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. Brad, as Public Works Director, I'd like to thank you personally, and I know that we have a couple folks here from Public Works that's hoping you might be able to point them out and introduce them to. And is it just John? So John is who I've encouraged everyone to reach out to take the tour of our facility. And so now you're all on record as nodding your heads, yes, we will do that. So John, be prepared to have them. Thanks for coming out tonight. And hats off to you and the rest of the folks. Okay. That said, we'd like to have a presentation at this time. The presentation is by H3O, and it's regarding the proposed cable park at Lake Tahoe. And Brad, as you can see, I didn't end up moving.
What's that?
As you can see, I didn't end up moving after all of that. You're right, where you should.
I thought we have public comment first.
We'll have public comment.
Perfect. There's six there.
Screen was actually back here because a fair amount of this is going to be visual towards the end, and we certainly would like everybody to see some of that. I guess we just wanted to really kind of start off by kind of reintroducing ourselves and making sure people know who Greg and I were. Everybody's sort of H3O through this process, but really H3O is Greg and I in this business, and we've formed it really specifically to create a cable park, or several, throughout the entire Northwest. And obviously this project is one we've been working on for some time now, and it represents an opportunity to create that public-private partnership that we think would be a win for both sides here. So to give a little background on us, and again, there will be more disclosure to come, at least on several other topics as we get further into the lease discussion down the road. But for now, myself, I graduated from the University of Washington in general studies and real estate development. So my background is kind of geared towards the development side of this project, where Greg comes from a little more of a background in the sports industry, tied directly to the industry of wakeboarding and water skiing. So he could probably elaborate a little bit on his background and the years he's put in knowing not only what happens in the Northwest here with this industry, but also worldwide.
I have the fortunate ability to travel the world and sell water skis, and it's a job I've dreamed of since I was a little kid. Worked at this company for 20 years, and to travel throughout Europe, to travel throughout Russia, Australia, everywhere, and come back, and these cable parks are all around the world, and they're just catching on here, and that's really where I have my excitement and passion for this. Is you see these work in a private-public partnership on public lakes, within parks, all throughout the world, and it's not something new. I've been to some cable parks in Russia that have been around since the 1980s, the 70s, so it is something that's, it's definitely not new to the world, but it's definitely new to the United States, and especially the Northwest, and most of these parks, believe it or not, are right in Germany. 80 of these parks in Germany, that's where it was developed. 80 parks, and granted there's a ton of people living in Germany, 12 million plus, but these parks, they're huge. When kids think of water sports, when families think of water sports, they think of cable parks. It's truly the environmentally friendly version of towed water sports. So I think that's it for a little bit of background from Brad.
So one thing we want to start off with was really a discussion of some of the things we've heard throughout this process, and really a lot of the questions, concerns, and things that have come up that we will be addressing through the body of this presentation. So just up front, just to kind of bullet them out, we want to just present some of the things that have immediately come up. So who's paying for what has been a big question. What's Monroe's cash outlay in this process? It takes up half the lake, and this is some people's perception of this. The impact of parking and traffic has been a big concern. The aesthetic impact to the lake and its surroundings is something we want to speak to. What is a public-private partnership? So I think a lot of people don't have a great understanding of the varying natures of what's being done between private entities and public entities. What is the truth about the environmental impact, the noise, the waterfowl impact? And again, to caveat this a little bit, a lot of this will be answered obviously in the SEPA document that will be presented to follow. So we won't dive into that too deeply. We'd rather leave that to the actual experts that can speak to that rather than hearsay. What is the lease term? Obviously, we presented initially a 25-year presentation, and that's been changed as we move forward through this process and negotiated and discussed what's best for the community and what's best for us going forward, so we'll present that. What are going to be the seasons, the hours of operation? What's the pricing? Is it affordable to people locally? Will it involve a local discount, and the impact to local businesses, as well as to the existing activities that are being done at the lakes, such as the fishing tournament, the triathlons, and so forth. So these are all things we'll get into, and I think one big distinction I want to make sure that people make right up front is that this is not the pro wakeboard event. It's really important that people separate out that this is not an event over one or two days that draws 7,000 plus people. This is a daily business that's going to have a steady flow of people at a much, much lesser rate. So it's not the high concentration and all the negative externalities that are created with that. So as we go forward through this, I hope people will make sure that they understand that there's a real difference here and not apply what they've seen from that event to this. It's completely different. So to answer these questions, we kind of broke into four areas: the public-private partnership, break it down to season hours, attendance, and rates, as the business plan predicts, and kind of where those numbers came from. Excuse me. The impact to Lake Tai and the local businesses. And really, finally finish up with a real nice visual representation of what we propose this to look like, how it fits on the site, and how it answers some of the other questions that have come up. So I guess the first part being a discussion about the lease and the agreement. So we obviously initially proposed a 25-year lease, and that was really kind of built around the concept of a concessionaire agreement, excuse me. And we've changed that really to now to provide some of the answers that the city had about getting a little bit more of a guarantee out of it perhaps giving up some of the revenue potential by sharing the profit side of things exclusively. We broke it down to really a 10-year program with five-year add-ons to follow. And in doing so, each of those 5 years will hopefully present some opportunity for the city to make sure that we're living up to our end of the bargain on this thing, on both being a steward for the park as well as the financial expectations that go along with that. So these are things that we want to have kind of built into the lease program to make sure that we have the right to continue to go forward, but we'll do it making sure that we live up to our end. And that's the performance criteria. So the HCRL will be paying for the cable park. So to dispel any concerns, rumors people have, built into the plan is really no cash outlay by the city of Monroe. We are taking everything on ourselves. We'll fund it, we'll build it, and we'll run it. And it will be a 2,500 square foot building with parking and site improvements that will address any needs for the park and for the area. And again, the SEPA document and preliminarily has shown us that the park actually has enough parking for an active park of its size. And it really isn't necessary for us to make add-ons to that, but again, going forward, it's something we are going to do because I know it's a concern for the community. I know one big concern that's come down in some of the legal matters is the issue of liability and indemnification. These are things that, again, I'm sure our lawyers will be working out the language on, but in essence, it really comes down to the liability will have a layer of protection provided by an insurance policy for the park. It takes away any coverage for the city that is within the control space and the activity space for the park. Indemnification, obviously, we have a responsibility to maintain a certain level of quality and customer safety within the area there. So, again, these things will be spelled out more in the body of the lease in the legal language that I'm sure will be to follow. The financial agreement. We obviously initially came with a pure profit sharing up front, and that's changed really to, again, provide a base lease payment plus 2% of gross. So, again, there is a sharing of the profits, but a guarantee that goes along with that. Again, along with the financial agreement, and again, we'll talk about the numbers here in just a second, and I'll show you some examples of what we predict. But it's also the tax base impact. You have two things in the city of Monroe. You have a sales tax, and you also have an admissions tax. And actually, the admissions tax associated with this provides a nice economic kicker for this project. And again, maybe we can flip to that in just a second. But the last part is, of course, the protected days for the existing activities, control over the buoyed area during business hours, because we have to obviously be able to protect the space and the riders, as well as the people in the community that may not be riding, that are also on the lake. And then when it comes to the point of actually getting to the lease being signed, that's when we'll be providing all the funding and financial disclosures, both personal and for our investors. So next thing I think is, are we not on the spreadsheet?
Yep, it's on the spreadsheet, sorry. If you guys skip to your presentation in there, every time we put up these Excel docs onto the screen, you can never read them. And it just ends up being a bunch of blurry numbers. So they are in all of your packets right here.
Touch on it on the bottom, really, is what we're focusing on here. So you'll see the admissions tax year one presents $29,000, $691.37. The sales tax represents $1,474 and change. The lease itself, under the predicted amount, and again, the way this breaks down is the black numbers are the predicted numbers based on the research that we've done. The blue numbers represent the very low end, what that expectation could be, and the green represent the high end of what that could be. So obviously, we're playing it down the middle. If anything, we're on the conservative side of what we learned from comparable parks throughout Germany, Australia, and other parts of the world that share a similar climate. And it really came down to about 150-day season is really the break points on where the attendance and so forth are feeding off of, just so you know. So if you, again, add that up, the bottom column really totals it out. What we predict is a first-year city portion would be $58,539 as far as the contribution from this facility. And as anyone who's studied Economics 101 knows, there's a multiplier that goes along with that. So any of this activity is going to be driven even more to the other businesses in the area, probably more to the retail than others. But there's a real positive twist that comes along that is intangible. Second year, $80,266. Third year, $100,708. You'll see year four, $111,000. year 5, 118. So again, showing a pretty steady increase, and we expect that, again, come about year 5, we'll probably plateau out as far as what the expectation will be on a year-to-year basis. So other than the rate of inflation, there probably won't be a significant growth in numbers from that point on. We see the capacity of the park really being about 29 to 30,000 visitors per year. So if you kind of compare that to, again, taking it back to that comparison between the peak pro event, which happens over a 1 or 2 day period of 7,000 people, this draws first year 11,000 people over the entire 6 month period. So getting spread out in a much wider time. In fact, the peak times on this will really, as we see it, draw only about 200 people in the course of a day. If you break that down hourly, a summer day, at peak times, it really comes out to about 15 cars per hour, most likely, is really the impact to the area. So the traffic as we see it, and again, the SEPA will really get into this a little bit deeper, will not be a significant change.
You're getting so good. The next slide is the seasons, the hours, attendance, and rates. The seasons, our peak would be June through August. And in that peak season, we'd be open 7 days a week. Our shoulder seasons being April, May, September, and October. This would be more weekends only. So typically this time of year, we've had a great 6 week stretch here with great weather. So these are the kind of weekends that we would be open. It'd be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday deal, of course, working within existing events that happen. Hours of operation, 9 a.m. to dusk. Again, these hours are seasonal. You know, it depends daylight savings time when it happens, but those are the parameters of the hours. Attendance, annual. So on this next page here, we dive into the attendance. Again, refer to your sheets here. It is an Excel sheet also. And Brad, since you put this together,
it's okay. It's the same page actually that we just looked at. If you look at the very top row of boxes, and this is more breakdown on a first year basis. But if you look at the top row, it goes from year to year. So 11,000 the first year. What's the second year? I think it's 14. Third year, 17,000. So you can see the actual expectation for attendance to the park. And we, just so you know, we built this really off of a discussion between SESI-TEC's owner, which is the tower company. And he shared with us really from various parks throughout Jeremy when they opened it up what their predictions are. And really their first year prediction for a park that's slightly larger than this is usually what they're building, because most of their parks are built to site out there, is that usually they're expecting 15 to 20,000 people first year. So we're coming in a little more on the conservative side of expectations. It will be a slightly smaller facility. But also, again, we'd rather make sure that from the prediction standpoint on the revenue side that we're really being very conservative. And on the cost side, we try to be as aggressive as possible to make sure that, again, all promises would be exceeded here. So,
to give an idea, the OWC is a cable park in Orlando between the Orlando Airport and iDrive. You'll drive by it if you ever go to any of the theme parks down there. Orlando, the OWC pulls about 65,000 participants a year. Now, they operate on about a 325-day season. 340, I would say, would be max, depending on the hurricane season, how it goes. We operate on about a 150-day season. So the business plan is built a lot off. You look at even in the local ski area, Stevens Pass, same thing. I think they have their longest running year this year at 155 days. So it's very common if you compare the two. And really, if you compare the cable park to a ski area, it's very common too. You know, Stevens Pass is a lease. Same thing, private-public partnership. There was actually two. There's a sales forecast here. And then the second page, you can see the revenue numbers. And on the top of that second page, as year 1, 2, 3, and as we spoke of earlier, you can see the revenue numbers as they increase over the year. But then again, they plateau about that 24,000 mark.
If you look at that bright color page, actually, it'll tell you by month what the expectation will be. In the first year, the peak time is 85 people in the months of July on an average day.
So, next page here. Impact on Lake Tai and local businesses. Parking, as Brad spoke of, that we will create, and we'll go through here at the end the images and stuff, but we will create 25 additional parking spaces. Plus, we have an agreement in place for across the street some overflow parking for one of the local businesses. Traffic, as Brad spoke of, 15 cars per day. Again, we'll dive into that a little bit more specific in the CEPA report, but on average, 15, 20 cars a day max with the numbers we're going with.
And environmental, the CEPA checklist will address a lot of these environmental questions. Again, for us to get up here right now and go into detail with that would take quite some time. Local partnerships, community, youth groups, social programs. There's so much going on around Monroe, and that's what's great. There's so many churches just located right next to the site there. The YMCA is right there. It's a great avenue. We were able to go out and speak to local high school this week, and the excitement from the youth and giving them something to do is just, it's huge. And these kids, it gives them something local. They can skateboard over there, ride their bikes over there, rent the boards right there, or bring their own boards. Lake filtration. I'll touch a bit on this. There is an existing what's called a bioswale. So where the stormwater runoff goes into the lake, you'll see a little pond off to the side. It's kind of overgrown right now with woods, but it would be just north of the skate park right there. That little part, that bioswale, was supposed to fill that pond, and then it basically makes an S into the lake. And there's grasses that filter the water before then it enters Lake Tye. What happened during one of the flood years, we would assume, is that filtration was blown out by the flood. And so basically there's a big gaping hole in it, and the water drains straight from that pond into Lake Tye. So what we propose is to build a filtration system, or a bioswale, I guess.
Improve it
and build a brand new bioswale and treat the water before it gets into the lake through this. So we'd improve the existing site.
One of the things we've kind of heard throughout this too is a lot of people have commented about how they don't think the water quality has got great in the lake. And you know, whether that's true or not, again, it's probably left to be determined. Obviously, there's a public beach there, so it becomes a concern no matter what. But I think one of the things we wanted to bring to the table was really to benefit the site and being able to actually address that issue that has been deemed by an engineering firm to be non-functional currently. We can make it somewhat, if not fully, functional in this process.
The noise has been brought up. The cable itself runs on a virtually silent 30 kilowatt motor. So a lot of people will go to like OWC, for example. OWC, that cable was bought from an old park that was in Phoenix, Arizona. And the lake was bought out in Phoenix, Arizona. They turned it into housing. It was during the housing boom. They bought it and moved that cable out to Orlando. They painted all the towers bright blue. Obviously, they're on the side of the freeway, so they want to attract as many people as they can. They hang banners everywhere. Where we're looking to do the opposite. We want to blend. We're not going to hang banners. We're not looking to advertise the site. We'll advertise it through other avenues. But the biggest thing is that cable is old. It was built in the 80s. The electric motor is, I want to say it's 25 years old. I think they replaced the motor itself about 25 years ago. So it is a little bit louder cable. You hear a little bit. When I say a little bit, it's no louder than my voice right here. But you can hear a little bit. The local businesses. We kind of addressed this with parking. There was some concern with the local businesses and an overflow of parking, where, to Brad's point, 15 to 20 cars a day, here we're going to put in 25 spots. I mean, we cover the spots right there. And again, if there's any overage, we have an agreement with somebody across the street where we can park overflow. Do you want to add anything to local businesses? Or?
No, I think one of the things we just heard through the process was that, you know, obviously for the retailers, they like the idea for the most part in that it draws more people to help their businesses grow. But for other people who have other activities, I think the fear was that the traffic and the noise and people filling up their parking lot was really something they were very concerned about. And probably for very good reasons. But I think the reality is after the facts have come to light, the 15 cars per hour and the fact that we want to address adding some spots to the park itself to make sure that we can protect against that is something that we really built into this whole plan.
We talked a little bit about the existing activities. We've been to the trout tournament. We've been out to the triathlon out there. We, of course, have been to the Pearl Wakeboard Tour. We are going to work with the events. We want to come into Lake Tye, and the biggest thing is we're going to add an activity without disrupting the activities that are already taking place. And that's really what we want to get across, is that this site, really, in rounding up, it only takes up about a third of the lake, if that. So we still will have those 12 days here, the Pro Wakeboard Tour, the triathlons, the hydroplane races. We're in the agreement. Those days will still be honored and still have those days. I think the biggest thing people want to see is the aesthetics and see what it looks like. So getting to the next images here, we can project these also. The artists that actually rendered this rendered them in black. We can paint the towers multiple. They come up. I guess the best way to look is it's a stainless
galvanized.
They're all galvanized towers. So it kind of has that stainless look to it. Personally, I think that that blends into the environment and you see through it a lot more. Black makes them stand out a little bit more. So keep that in mind. This is tower number one right here at the dock. This is the tower that's going to be the most obvious. So it has the electric motor on it. So we figured we'd show this one. This is, of course, shot from the beach. The beach will not be affected. We've had a couple comments locally that the beach will be affected by this. The beach will not be affected at all. The boat ramp will not be affected. When the cable is in operation, there will be a buoy line that goes across here and then down the cable part.
One thing to draw from this picture that, again, it's very easy to see the one on the right here, obviously, because it's the closest one. But I think one of the big things this thing brings to the table is there's actually two, if not three, towers in the distance. And the real question is from the perspective side of being at this point, how well do those blend into the distance? You might see the one closest to you, but do you really see the ones in the back? I think you're going to find that in most parks like this, and especially the more there is going on behind the back of the lake, you're going to find that they actually blend in and almost disappear. In fact, we had some great images of different parks throughout the world where you can't even see them.
The one thing to keep in mind, this is the actual shot. When we go into the renderings, the little anchor line goes to the bottom of the lake. So the anchor line obviously will enter the water at about 30 feet. So once it enters the water, of course, it's going to be further out. So where the lines look like they come a lot further out, the line will enter the water between, it's roughly halfway, depending on the angle of the line, between the anchor and the tower, to give you an idea. Here's another one. There's two different cables. There's the six-tower cable, and then there's a two-tower system. Ours is called a 2.0. Sissy Tech manufacturer makes it. The two-tower system is great for beginners. A lot of these parks you go to, and there's just the one six-tower system. Well, as an entry-level rider, it's very intimidating sitting down next to a dock or a rider that's there every day. And that's the biggest turn-off is we want people to be excited. We want people to come out there and try it for their first time. It's interesting, this Hydrus Cable Park just opened in Dallas, Texas. The first participant, the first community person that was out there was a 65-year-old gentleman. He's been there every week since it's open. He never wakeboarded before. And he was intimidated. These guys all pushed him to go on the main cable. Of course, he's the first person. But he's in love with it, and he fell in love with wakeboarding. And the biggest thing he says is he can take his friends to this 2.0 or this lake, you know, off to the side where they're not as intimidated to sit down on the dock next to a good rider.
Again, similar thing, you know, obviously towers here in the foreground, but there's the one here and on the other side of the lake, there and there. They really almost are less impactful than the power lines that you'll see on the lake itself. And again, keep in mind this is a CAD overlay of an actual photo, so again, the painting of those towers can be even much more, painted so that they'll blend in. So.
Hey, Brett, if you could point the dock too, there is one thing that we didn't show in the first renderings. There's actually a dock that will come out, and it only comes down, it's about two-thirds of the way down from the 2.0. And what it prevents is if you were to fall on the main cable, it allows you to swim to the dock and walk back. If you were to fall on the 2.0, it allows you to swim to the dock and walk back. In the first photos, if you were to fall, you'd have to swim through where the riders are riding in the 2.0. So in other words, they'd have to shut it down every single time. This dock is a floating dock. I don't know, most of you have probably seen these, but it's a molded plastic. It kind of locks in like a Lego. So it basically would attach all the way up there.
That's something that we could either leave in place or move out of the way during the off season. But if for example, you know, depending on, I guess, some of the legalese and how the lease agreement comes together, I guess it would be potential that could add to, you know, the fisherman's use of that area too. But just something.
The dock only connects on one end, so it's very easy to, for lack of a better term, I guess, patrol to make sure that people don't walk. It doesn't turn into a walkway around the lake. Here you can see that same dock. Again, it's an artist rendering, so it's tough to... The Photoshop, I think, puts it a little close. I think it's a little further away than it actually shows at this angle.
This is the main dock starting area. This would be the tower one, which also has this drive system right here. The electric motor is placed up at the end of that.
And then here's the park as an overall view. So you can see that the first renderings we had actually had it coming almost out to the halfway point of the lake. Almost out to where that point comes out. The second rendering is once we're able to do the survey. What's it, the bio?
We did a bathymetric survey of the lake.
So once we're able to do that survey, we take the measurements and actually take the lake and lay it out proper. We send it off to Sissy Tech, and they're able to lay out the perfect cable. I even came back and said, hey, I feel this is a little short. And they said, if we were to build the perfect cable, this is how long you want it. some of these cable parks I've been to in Russia, they were laid out in the 80s. They go, it's more of a square, and they go for a long time. Well, as a proficient cable rider, you don't want the cable to bend from side to side. So the longer distance you have between tower to tower, that's what allows for it to bend, or you're able to pull it. The whole thing with wakeboarding or water skiing or kneeboarding, whatever you do behind it, is you want to resist the tower's pull and edge away from it, and that's how you get the, that's how you jump. So to call it the wake park was kind of ironic, because there is no wake. It's kind of like riding a rope swing. So it'll edge away from the cable, and that's how you get your air. Any questions? You can see the bioswale. We'll get into a little bit more detailed photos here, though, so you can see. Here's a little bit more zoomed in. You can see over on the right the added parking stalls. And really we took and squared off, if you want to say, the turnaround that's already there in the park. We met with the local fire department. And was it the fire chief you spoke to?
Yeah, I spoke to the fire marshal, just to make sure that any questions or concerns versus why there's actually a round turnaround that doesn't provide any parking currently, but it was put there obviously for access for the fire and aid vehicles. So he had some very specific things that just had to be met, both from the perspective of the turnaround, but also to address both hose lines to certain distances and areas of the park. So in designing this, the architect made sure that we are compliant with all of those features as well. And in doing so, just to give you a sense of scale, the outer edge of this on either side is actually the outer area where the curb is. So right now, that circle would represent about that much space. So we're really just kind of shifting it, the island portion, into the middle a little bit more with the turnaround, moving a little bit out of the way, and then providing and cutting off that area where there's one little bank to provide additional spaces on both sides here. In addition, you'll notice that the path will be connected adjacent to the building and around the outside of the parking structure, tying into the walking path over here. So currently, people that are circling the lake, walking, running, bicycling, whatever, they have to cut through the parking lot to connect up to the path here, which I'm sure isn't as comfortable as this will present as a natural way around the lake.
Councilor, do you have a question on this?
I did. Is that the bioswale up around
here? Yeah, I think we'll zoom in one more time and I'll kind of get more of a sense of what we have in mind here.
And what's that extension?
Just basically a little platform or bridge that would span it. Because what we want to have is obviously you have crawl out points here as in addition to the walk back on the dock. But if someone swam to the side to one of the protected crawl out points, and again, these are things that we're going to make sure we protect the shoreline and the water through the development. So probably some type of a permeable block that's filled up that will not allow erosion will be placed into the water so people can crawl out, walk back. But the idea being is that at this point it connects up and allows them to come right back to the dock space as opposed to having to walk back and get involved with the traffic on the path.
Okay. Thank you.
These crawl-out points or walk points, really, they exist. So we just improve what's already there. From just people going out into the water, there's some erosion points. And within the park, I think we've counted either 6 or 8. Some are questionable. But we would then improve those areas so it's easier to step out. And then for future use, obviously, they're not going to erode anymore.
Yeah. Can you go back?
Yeah.
So the question I have is on the crawl-out point, on the, I guess that would be the west side.
Over here?
Right there, yeah. So because on the liability, you've made the statement on the control space or the activity space. That's outside of the activity space, right? Isn't the crawl-out space outside of the control space or the activity space?
We'd have to put that in.
I mean, yeah, obviously the protected area, I think, and again, this kind of comes back to the final language on the lease agreement that hasn't
right.
worked out as far as the liability side. But obviously, I think it came down to a couple things. When the business is operating, the idea being is someone is riding their kayak up here and decided to enter that space, they put themselves in danger. So we have to have some capability to control that space and protect both the kayak person as well as the person on the water riding. As far as the crawl out space, yeah, obviously they're going to have to cross through that area, walk back along that path. Now, if they trip and fall, I mean, there's probably 10,000 different things that someone could do and try to create a lawsuit or a blame off of. And again, I'll leave it to the lawyers to find out where the definitions lie on that. But it's my understanding that they felt like that could be resolved.
It's interesting because Brad had these lines straight down the lake over the path on both sides of the cable, and I made him take them out. But basically, it identified the area. So there was a big red line at this end saying that's where the cable park ends. There was a big red line at that end, kind of going straight out from the boat ramp down. Mm-hmm. So that beach area would obviously be out of play. And I didn't think it looked good, so I had to take it out. But there would be a defined area.
Yeah, that didn't even come to me until, because I did visit the Orlando Sports Park area about 2 weeks ago. And then noticing they wipe out. That's of course you say you're not really riding if you're not wiping out, right? So that would be, I guess, just the only thing that I question is that, because that's supposed to be unobstructed, back and forth for boats and trolling and
for sure.
Yeah, we think, obviously, I think people learn in the process, but they go on the cable. The last place you're going to want to take a chance and fall is way over here, because the walk back is going to be a ways. So I think people kind of learn that. Will it happen? I'm sure. But, again, one of those things we have to do. As far as the amount of traffic through here, I don't think that probably presents too much danger. And if you've seen the people ride at the park, you notice that even for the next rider coming along, it's very easy to get out of the way.
The only reason why, because the boat launches right there. So if you're launching your boat during the middle of the day, and you can use a battery-powered motor on it, which most people do.
Kind of cruise up here.
They're going to be cruising through up there.
Yeah.
So that's why. Okay.
Here's probably a better shot of that bioswale. So you can see right now, Brad, you can kind of show them where it blew out, which is right about where you had it, right
so
there.
So the pond is in the same area currently. The outflow pipe is here. The swale was originally designed to flow in this direction and then back. So it forms kind of a big loop. I think it enters in the lake over here as well. At some high water mark in the past, it actually built up enough to blow up directly out into the lake here. So it's flowing directly through. The pipe apparently sits too low to do much with it as far as changing anything from this point back up the system. But what we thought we could do is actually now recreate, and I guess the bioswale is intended to pass the water for a fair amount of distance through both certain vegetation and filtering rocks and so forth to actually have it take out the particulate matter for the most part. And by extending it down the side here, we've just changed really where that's going and letting it enter the lake up here. So again, trying to put that system back in function is really what we're trying to get at. Again, the path would span that, not intercept it in any way, or just pass over it with a little bridge.
The whole new system takes place within the, I'll call it a treed area. The treed and the blackberry bushes, that area, it takes place within that same area.
And you'll see, again, this is the representation of obviously the fire truck as far as length and its need for turnarounds. I think it was a 45-foot lane. And obviously the connection to the walking path going past the building and carrying around down to where it comes past the covered structure currently.
So here's some graphic renderings of the actual facility. I'll go through these, and we actually have a flyby that we put together. The camera will take you through the whole structure. This is the 2,500 square foot building. Within this building, I'll talk about the floor plan a little bit more in a minute. There'll be a pro shop, and there'll also be a meeting facility. I have a 3 to 4 year old daughter, almost 4 year old daughter. She goes to these bounce houses, all these birthday parties. That's really what we're looking to do. It's going to be a structured event where these kids come out and they can learn how to wakeboard on the 2.0. They basically, once the party takes place, then they have their birthday cake and all the pizza, and then they'll go down to the 2.0. Or they go to the main keyhole if they're a proficient wakeboarder. Within this, there'll be a pro shop, changing rooms, and all that. And again, I'll get into it. This kind of gives you a good overlay of the dock. And the shape of the dock, you can see when you start that to accommodate for the rise and obviously the drop of the water, it's a floating dock where you actually start from. So there'll be a piling dock that you would typically think of above, and then this lower dock will lever up and down right there. You can see there's two step-down grass areas there, stepping down from the building, and then the stairs on the over towards the boat ramp side.
Kind of viewing areas that people could put a blanket out on or do whatever to sit and watch and rest in between sessions of being on the water. As you probably learned, no one goes out there and rides constantly for any length of time. You get too tired.
The 2.0 is actually controlled. So the two-way cable, there would just be one operator there. The operator would control it and talk to the riders because there is only one rider on the system at a time. So that's the system to the left right there. The system to the right requires somewhat of a seated or a covered area. Within that covered area, there's actually a digital keyboard, or it almost looks like an iPad, that runs the whole system. If someone wants to fall, you simply touch a button, and the cable shuts down, and everybody just sinks down in the water. That person will sit right there. Now, that person is actually, they sit in a stand almost like this, and they'll just hand the handle to a rider. Now, in these handles, they're triangular, just like a regular ski handle. But once you fall with this handle, the handle opens up. So as the handle's skipping around, say, were to fall right off the dock, it doesn't hit anybody and catch their helmet or catch their vest. Once it hits the water, it skips forward and locks. And so that's the main cable over there to the right. Now, again, that's Tower 1, and again, they're labeled all the way out. Finishes off at Tower 6.
Councilman McGill.
Yeah, just a question. So that's different than what I witnessed down there. So is that different depending on what park you're in? Because down there, if you wiped out, everybody just kept going. Wait.
Yeah, no, so if you wipe out, you'd swim back. But say there was some sort of emergency. Say someone said, hey, I fell really hard or I need some assistance. You can shut the system down. So they don't shut it down for every single fall.
Okay,
that is fine. It's if there was something to happen, if a kayaker or a paddleboarder would have paddled into the area, you're able to shut it down right there. Okay.
And something that I had a discussion with the fire marshal, too, that he basically offered and said that, you know, when you get to the point where your staff is to be trained, you can say, we're more than happy to help you get them all trained in CPR and first aid as well. So, and again, that's something from the beginning. We knew that all of our staff would be trained on that. And in fact, the space in the middle has been preserved. Really, that's where the safety vehicle will be. So some type of either, whether it be a jet Sea-Doo or something with a sled on the back or a little pontoon boat, either way, some way to get to people that need a little assistance will be right there.
You're just looking from the skate park back at the building. You can see there's four apparatuses on here. So there's a what they call a kicker that's on the right as you go out right there. It doesn't zoom in very well, but as you were to take off the dock and kind of out just off the building there, there's two apparatuses. Now to hit one of these rails or kickers, you actually have to be a proficient rider. You won't go out there out of control and fall off one of these. They're put out far enough to where you have to be able to edge out to them to go up onto them. And I'm sure you noticed that at the WC. I think Brad was a little, I took Brad, he was a little intimidated. You know, you go out there and there's all these kickers. And I go, Brad, just go right inside the cable and you don't have to hit him. It's fine once you get out there.
Excuse me, just for terminology, mm-hmm. You're talking about a ramp.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. And there's a company that makes these. It's Unit is the name of the company. And they're based out of Germany. They have a U.S. office here. But you think of some of these, and I guess a good example would be the skate park, of course. But these are made up of plexiglass. There's no screws in them. I mean, obviously for rust and all the concerns that you'd have when you introduce one of these to the water, they're really, it's amazing. It's almost 2 to 3 inch plexiglass. Everything's countersunk inside there with stainless bolts. So they last forever. These things are bulletproof. Back in the day, you go to the OWC, some of theirs are still the old kind of, they're screwed together because these are very expensive to buy. The unit rails are, they're about $60,000 for three of them. So it's quite an investment.
The towers are to scale in this, so I mean, you see that they're spread out so far and they're really not that big.
Is that from Tower 1, looking out from the beach right there? And you can see the trail or the sidewalk extending behind it?
Path, and then obviously this would be the main entrance to the building, so kind of right along the skate park area there. Most likely we'll have some type of a little rinse off shower outside with hot water so people can kind of rinse off as they come and go. And the access down to the dock itself.
Yeah.
So does the boy line represent the swimming area?
Yep.
Right there. So,
yeah,
so the cable area, I guess, would be
the cable.
Yeah, it marks the outside boundary of the cable. So obviously we have to protect from a certain amount of distance, I believe it's 7 meters on either side of the central of the cable itself. So as people edge out, they can only reach so far. So we have to provide that width, and that's the outer boundary for the park when it's open.
Is that effectively where the swimming area is marked out now?
Yeah, pretty close. Okay. As far as that's going to be the closest point right there.
It's actually a little further back. It's about 40 or 50 feet past where that
is. Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If you think about it, because that's the end of the boat ramp, there's quite a bit of, there's some foliage
marked
between
here coming out like this, I believe, currently.
Yeah.
But effectively, the swimming area would remain the same.
Yeah.
Size.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the things, having the discussion with the people that do the RC boat racing was an interesting discussion because they said one of the things they've been up against is with these little boats racing around is they can pretend a danger to a swimmer in the water. Mm-hmm. Big danger because they go 70 miles an hour, I guess. I didn't realize this. But But they said that their insurance policy that they carry requires them to not have swimmers in the water unless there was some type of a catch barrier across that. So one of the things we would probably present if we had a conflict on days, which doesn't seem very likely based on their calendar, but there was, we came up with a solution. It's basically like a little tennis net that drops down into the water with a cable on top and bottom, and it has the capability to stop anything from penetrating. So again, just a solution that provides an answer, and again, it would extend past the swimming area, because I think they do their races down in that area too.
Here's a quick floor plan. There's a couple tweaks Brian and I are looking to do this, but you get an idea that the basics are all here. There'll be a small office, changing rooms, bathrooms. Again, these two are our biggest change. They're a little too small. We'll increase the size of that. We'll actually increase the size of the meeting room. We're going to bring it all down and towards the back of the building, the skate park side of the building. The far side is the lake side. If you kind of picture it, I think you'll see it in the next photo here coming up. But that whole side has roll-up doors. So the sunny, warm days like today, we'd roll up those doors and kind of have that open-air feel.
This is all covered out here, too, on the outside portion here. So the idea being that we can expand that space by rolling up those doors. I think a lot of restaurants and things are doing that these days.
The far left, north corner up there would be the check-in counter. You can check in from outside, inside. And the purple represents pro shop. The burgundy on the right and the brown represents the rentable space.
And if you look along here, this is actually on the outer edge of the building. We'll have a series of lockable lockers that people can put their things out to, just store them safely while they're in the park.
Here's a good rendering of the cables themselves on the water. Again, tower number one, the first tower, has the motor on it, extends out the furthest. These towers, there's really nothing on except for the pulleys on the end to spin the cable around. The tower itself extends 30 feet from the water up to the top. So if you were to drop a plumb bob, right from the corner right there to the water, it's about 25 to 30 feet. Depends on the system itself, but that's the ideal. As a good rider, that's where you want it.
And it's important to note that that level actually looks like it'll be lower where the power lines are.
Quite.
The lake.
It depends on your side. Is it the west side? The side with the 2.0 over there is actually going to be the level is higher. The ground on the power line side is lower of the lake. It's about, I think it's 10 feet variance between the two sides of the lake, maybe 8 feet.
You said it's 30 feet, right?
Yeah, from the water level, where it comes out of the water.
There's the ground for telecommunications is 20 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. The lake itself is 25 to 30 feet deep. So depending on where the tower sits, we'll have to have a few different sized legs to make sure that at the top level they all meet the same. In laying it out though, if you look at the layout, they take that into account with the bathymetric survey. They can see where the bottom of the lake is, where that's going to sit. The cable itself, the towers, the pad that it sits on is only about the size of this podium, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe about 3 feet by 3 feet. And really the cable, you don't have to recess it in the bottom. They'll basically make a little gravel cage that it rests in. And really the cables, the anchors there, you drill in, and then there's just a little hook. So all that sits out is a little hook where the cable hooks on, and then this tower just rests on it. So just the weight of the tower coming down is all that goes into it. So there's no sort of concreting these into the bottom of the lake. They just sat right in the bottom of these pads. So we want to go through and make sure, kind of a little review for us, make sure we address everything. Who's paying for what? I think we address that. What is Monroe's cash outlay? We've addressed that. It takes half the lake. I think through these layouts you've been able to see that it doesn't take half the lake. Impact of the parking and traffic. Again, we've addressed that with the addition of the parking spots and the agreement we'll have across the street. What is a private-public partnership? We've addressed that. The 2% gross and the lease payment along with the tax that comes back to City Monroe. Environmental, noise, waterfowl impact. Again, that will be addressed within the SEPA checklist and with the documents. We're working with Parametrics. I think we've let all of you know that. It's a very reputable Northwest-based firm. What's the lease term? We went through that. The 10-year term with 3 5-year options. The seasons, hours of operation, touched on that. Pricing, local discounts. One thing we didn't miss. If you're a Monroe resident, I mean, we want to, this park, we're a partner in this park. If the Monroe residents come out here, we succeed, you succeed, we are going to offer a 10% discount. Anyone that comes out, shows a Monroe ID, they're from the City of Monroe, they get a 10% discount in the park. Our seasons passes. We adjusted. We did a little research as far as ski areas around here. You go to the OWC, a lot of these cable parks in Texas, the Hydra cable park I spoke of in a previous meeting, they charge about $700 to $750 a day. Well, really, when Brad and I analyzed it, you look at the ski areas, like Stevens Pass just had its best year ever. They were open 155 days. We operate on a similar business plan. So we really sat down and, what does it take for me? I buy Seasons Pass at Stevens. What's it take for me to buy my pass? And we feel it's about 10 days, and that's what most of the ski areas around here operate. You go to Vail, you go to some of the higher end, that changes a little bit, Sun Valley. But we feel that 10 is about the number. So we brought our pass down from 750, which most of the cable parks are at, down to 450. And then again, the rates, I believe, $26 for a two-hour pass.
To expand on that, I'll just kind of touch on that because I don't think I breezed over it. But on, in the upper corner here is really the revenue portion for the cable itself. And to just for full disclosure, two-hour pass is one thing we'll be selling at $27. The four-hour pass is $34. The full-day pass at $45. And again, the season pass at $450. And again, the way that our research showed is that half of the sales of passes will come in the two-hour form. Apparently, the short-term passes are by far the most common thing you see with these parks. The second is actually the full-day pass. So people will come and kind of make a day of it. The four-hour pass being kind of the last, and then, or actually the third, and then the season pass, obviously, is kind of the unpredictable one. It's not like some parks have predicted a certain amount and they sold three times as many and didn't know exactly what to expect. So that's one reason I originally started with a higher number, because most of the parks had their season passes from $750 to $999. So we're obviously trying to be as cost-effective as possible. And also, again, benefit the community by bringing a discount along with that for Monroe residents.
Councilor Gale.
So the OWC, we are mirroring almost exactly the OWC rates.
Pricing?
Yeah.
I hadn't looked at them in so long, I didn't even know.
I've got them right here. So are you going to have, would you have a breakdown between 16 and under and 16 and over, or do a youth and an adult type deal?
I think we'd probably just go with the regularity and offer the discount for the Monroe people.
Okay.
Again, over time, I think some of these things will probably be adjusted as the market dictates. But again, the thing we were trying to compare against is if you look at like Stevens Pass or one of these ski areas, for the winter, I mean, what's a full day there cost? It's up over $60 now. For a shorter day in the winter than you're going to have out here in the summer day. So we thought that the pricing was really, really fair, and again, it gave us some leeway to make adjustments if necessary, but I think it works for us. You know, something we want to present. And again, the rest of that sheet, not to be too convoluted, but again, if you break down the top portion, it really shows you the expected attendance on a month-to-month basis. And then down at the bottom of that page are some of the additional services that we would like to have, being the pro shop, the ability to rent that space for different group events, birthday parties, and so forth, as well as the rental equipment that we'll have available on site for people that don't break their own.
You
might need to close the window.
PC is not liking my QuickTime file here.
Oh, it's not playing it?
No, just 1 second.
We had a little, see if you can play it, but what it does is it's a CAD fly-through of the park. I don't know if people saw the Husky Stadium one recently, but obviously they did a nice job in really kind of taking you around from all angles to see exactly what it would look like. I found it interesting that today was the day that they announced the public-private agreement between King County, City of Seattle, and Chris Hansen about the intention to build a facility to bring an NHL and an NBA team. It's a great example of how public and private can work together to really accomplish something that's great for the community.
We could open up for questions, Brian, while I get this up.
Sure.
You want to?
Council, any additional questions for... Gregor Brad, Councilmember Hampton.
Yes, thank you for your presentation tonight. Is there an area, I know you mentioned the shower area with hot water, and I'm looking at
the... Yeah, it's not really represented on the images as of yet, but it will be built into the plan to have an outdoor rinse-off shower with obviously fresh, clean water. As people come out, and it will be warm water.
Just an outdoor, not inside the bathrooms there?
As of yet, we didn't have the intention to put one inside.
Okay. I have taking the kids swimming down that way.
I did?
Several times over the years, and it'd be very important to have some kind of shiny.
Yeah, I think a picture of one kind of being on the outside there, a circular one that can point four directions and let people rinse off. I think at OWC, they had actually one of the walls has three or four ones that just come out from the wall that you can go up and rinse off before you head to your car or something.
Thank you.
Here we go.
If I could, before we do this.
And right about where that guy's standing is where we kind of presume the shower may be located.
Again, this whole dock and the start dock facility really takes place within the area, the overgrown or the bioswale area, just right next to the skate park there. So really between the pond and the boat ramp. What's that? Yeah, I think I hold on really quick, guy. I opened the wrong one. Sorry. Here we go. This one gives it a little bit better. You can see the apparatuses out there, the kicker and you set those up so as you go off the start dock there, for the right foot forward riders, you'll put one on the right, and then when you come back on the other side, you'll put a kicker on the left for the left foot forward riders. And then you do the opposite with the slider. You should put some music to this, Brad.
It's silent, though. I was kind of curious to your impressions of the sound that it would be to see with an older system there.
I took several videos when I was there, and the sound was that much. Actually, it does bring up a question of one thing I forgot to ask when we went through. Is there any PA system or any sort of?
We'll probably have to have some type of an announcement system, if we need to let people know of something that might be going on, but. And again, something that won't be used on any kind of a regular basis, or there won't be loud music blaring if that's kind of where you're going with this.
No. Was that the OWC? That was.
They have music out there?
Yeah, it was going the whole time. So.
Yeah, I think, with inside the pro shop, I can imagine there may be a little background something, but our intention is not to blare it outside by any means.
Yeah, it was out on the towers.
No, in fact, they won't be wired for power or anything.
I think that's it. We can open up for questions.
Anybody else have any other questions?
Actually, we'll leave that question portion to the council at this time. Council, anything else for Brad or Greg?
Thank you. Thank you.
May I ask if somebody might flip the switches that are right around the wall to be Well, gentlemen, I think the presentation was very informative, powerful, in the sense that it did show a very good scale in terms of the facility on the lake, which is important, I think, for folks to understand and to see. That, I think, has been the biggest misconception that we've had so far. And so thank you for putting those
thank you. We hope that gives the community and yourselves a better idea of what this project looks like, and that's really what we're trying to accomplish. Obviously, we've had a lot to work through. We came in the first time with an idea. I think now we brought it into a solid concept and brought it to reality. So thank you for your time.
It's our intention, by the way, that when the lease is finalized and we have the opportunity to obviously discuss that in more detail, if that's when any financial disclosures will happen, to understand that that's the appropriate time to bring that. So.
Well, we appreciate that, and we do know that the lawyers, as you put it, are busy at work putting together a win-win situation for the community and for yourselves. And we anticipate possibly in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we might see something before council for council consideration. Tonight's purpose here was for, as I said, for information's sake for the public as well as for council to be able to put a visual picture, create a visual picture in their minds when they consider the to use when they consider the contracts as those when those are forthcoming. Gentlemen, thank you again. I appreciate that. Okay, I'm sure there are a number of people that are dying to comment possibly on what they've just seen, and so I'll ask the City Council whether they would like to go into the comments from citizens at this portion or the public hearing on cannabis at this time. Okay, I thought as much. So we're going to change the agenda here and allow at this time to hear from citizens. This portion of the agenda is time that is set aside for individuals to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. You're welcome to address the Council on any other subject. We'd like to ask those who speak tonight that you offer your name and your address for the record, and please limit your time to 5 minutes. At this time, I only have one individual who has signed up to speak during this portion, and that is Crystal Shaver. Shaver.
My name is Crystal Shaver. I live at 17313 100th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington. I just wanted to come up here and say that a majority of the people that you're going to hear from today that are for the Wakeboarding Park don't live in Monroe. They don't live anywhere near it. I live 5 miles away from Lake Tai. So it does impact me. The people who live outside of the area don't have to deal with it on a daily basis. They're not losing something. They are only gaining something. Those of us that live in Monroe and nearby are losing a beautiful place of serenity, a place to go and walk and enjoy the peace and quiet during what might be a stressful day or a stressful period in your life. Now, for me, I'm in college, and during test weeks, midterms, finals, I go for a walk around the lake to gather my thoughts, to focus, and to just completely de-stress. I'm not going to be able to do that late with people zooming around the lake. You know, it's going to be noisier than it is now. There won't be that peace and quiet there. People who live in the city are going to be losing, not gaining. And that's not fair to us. It doesn't make any sense how, you know, you guys are supposed to be here for the citizens of Monroe and do what's best for us. Not for the pocketbook of the city. Not for outside enterprises to come in and disrupt what's already here. It's for the citizens of Monroe. And most of the people who say, no, we don't want this, live in the city of Monroe. They're the ones whose voice you should be considering, not ones from outside the area. Consider us, the citizens that you're supposed to be standing up for and representing, not other people. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the only individual that I have signed up tonight, but as always, I'd like to open up the podium to members of the audience who would like to address council on any subject except for the public hearing that we have this evening. That will be at a later time. Before I have anybody step up to the podium, though, I did want to make mention, and I failed to do so earlier, that we have as a visitor here today that I'd like to introduce, and that's Anique Bennett. And Anique Bennett is joined by her husband Scott here in the audience. And Anique is our new Monroe Chamber Executive Director. She began this week, and I had the pleasure of meeting with her and the Chamber President yesterday. Boy, time flies. had a wonderful conversation, and so I just want to say welcome to Anique. And Anique, do you want to say anything at this time to council?
Well, thank you so much for the introduction. I'm very excited to be working in this great community, anticipating all the wonderful development and all the activities that take place in the county here. I hope to keep enriching and developing connections with business, with the city, the county, and with the citizens. So I'm really looking forward to serving the community.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome.
Thanks.
With that said, is there anybody who would like to address council with regards to the Wakeboard Park or any other subject for that matter? If so, please approach the podium. I see one. I see two.
Oh, hi. How are you?
How are you?
It's Danny.
Oh, you got it. That was
his name.
Good evening, council. Thank you. Jeff Rasmussen, 16655 150 Street Southeast. First of all, gentlemen from H3L, thank you for coming doing the presentation. It does add some information, some clarity. I've come personally last several months and spoken to council every meeting and continue to maintain the concept of the cable park is a good idea for Monroe. The concept of the cable park in Lake Ty is not a good idea. And especially because I do believe that there are so many other options that the city holds to put a venture of this sort. We hear a lot about, and I've spoken a lot about, the cabin site. I still think it's a very viable option to really give a lot of consideration to the cable park. Today I had the opportunity to speak to a business colleague of mine who attended the, it was called the prison break in Monroe over the weekend. And it was over on the Rentlinger property on off of 177th, where the proposed adventure park is supposed to go. And he was telling me that there was over 3,000 people on the property for what they called a meet and greet. And outdoor enthusiasts, adventure enthusiasts with their special, that are there for outdoor off-roading purposes, gathered there, showed off their stuff, tested out their skills, had a great time. 3,000 people just in one day. And the more and more I talked to him about it and pulled it up on the map, it was, I realized this is less than a mile from an access point to the cabin site. And this venue is just all the more reason to leave the park that we have that has so many uses currently as is and keep it in the condition it is, and take this good concept of a cable park and put it in an area where it's going to be better utilized, especially with another business of adventure coming. You know, can you imagine having two adventure-themed businesses in the same area, what that would bring in? I looked at their website and a little bit about the property. RV parking, camping, all kinds of fun stuff that I would think that anyone coming out for the day or a weekend of cable park use would take advantage of as well. It's all right there. In conversations with council, one of the comments I heard was businesses. You know, we like Lake Ty because of the businesses being affected. Sure. But you put a concept like this that's going to take off as they say it does, businesses will follow. Businesses will grow. Our economic development manager should be thrilled about something like this, the possibility of new businesses popping up over there. It's business growth. It's a great opportunity. So I continue to say that a cable park concept in Monroe is a great idea. Just not like Ty. Let's look at other options. Let's continue to look at those options. And with the possibility of the adventure park coming, I think that's the Caden site is definitely a lot more feasible. If I can just add one more thing, I know that the contract is possibly coming up on June 5th. In addition to encouraging us to look at other options, I've also encouraged council and city to put a lot more emphasis into the public knowledge, getting more people involved. If a contract comes on June 5th and a vote is taken, then that's less than 2 weeks. I don't feel it's enough time to really get the public involved, have the public meetings that we need to address this. So I do encourage you that even if a contract does come on June 5th, take your time, review it, and let's get the public involved in on the process. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.
Sir?
Hi, my name's Aaron Edmonds, 16607 Ladd Street, Southeast Monroe, Washington. I think, again, I'm against the Wake Park, but I am for it somewhere else. Lake Ties are a little gem, that's fine. Cutting a big hole in it and keeping that off limits, except for those that pay, is a little odd. But I think where I come from is that a lot of people use our park, and then they leave, and then that's fine. A lot of business can be generated there, and then they leave, and that's just fine as well. But the lake is a public lake, as you know. And it looks to me that we seem to be privatizing the profit, but socializing the risk. Algae blooms, any number of things. Who's going to be responsible for that? I think that, and I appreciate you guys going through the towers and talking about that. I was concerned about the PA systems and thinking that events are going to have rock music blasting. I was also concerned about maybe stadium lighting or other kind of lighting that's going to happen. I hope that's not going to be a factor.
No lighting.
That's cool. And I did get a thing about the airplane zone that says that the towers were allowed the power poles, but I didn't know how that would affect things in the lake. I guess they actually made a correction at the sockeye so that the tower, the building could be that tall. But I think this is a good venture for Monroe, but bad at Lake Ty. I think that should be remaining the peaceful place that it is. I walk there all the time with my dogs. Like Jeff said, the public should know a little more about this. I've walked into most of the businesses there that, you know, the teriyaki place, and they have no idea what's going to hit them. I don't see anything at the bulletin board. I don't see anything at Lake Ty Park saying, you know, maybe perhaps we could put pictures up so that people actually see that there's going to be something happening at the lake that isn't going to go away and is going to just sit there for 6 months out of the year in the dark. And perhaps maybe it'll help the wildlife roosting on the towers during the idle time. I would just, if anything, the public needs to just, you know, June 5th is quite interesting. And with all of the houses around us, everyone's bailing out at the Frylands especially. We had two more houses going in the foreclosure. We have people not even wanting to rent the places. And now we're going to throw a big old park with cables. And this is just the beginning. Once the foothold hits, I bet you they're going to be like, well, look, there's a whole bunch more of that lake that we could take, maybe. And extend, maybe have phase two or phase three where, you know, maybe they'll say, oh, the fountain's great. Monroe's already built that. Let's just go and, you know, add the little scenic view and, you know. So I do see this expanding. I don't see it making too much money, as you know, unless people from the outside come in with their teenagers or want to pay $27 for 2 hours of this. Again, I'm not going to be going too much into the finances, but good idea perhaps, but not at Lake Ty where Monroe citizens, taxpayers have to deal with it. We're already dealing with several other things. I guess we're going to be going and turning the whole business district by Highway 2 between Sultan and Monroe, turning all that, I guess, weigh the natural wildlife into some kind of business park. But I do appreciate your time. Slow down a little bit, maybe. I'm hoping that, you know, by the time they get the thing up, it'll be, like, idle because it's Christmas or something, you know. I'll probably be here as I learn more and digest the new information that I've gotten. I guess we got 10 more feet. It was proposed at 65 or something, and now it's 75, I guess. So we get a little more space to throw our fishing reels. And so thanks for your time.
Appreciate you.
I'm Randy Port. I live at 127 Lincoln Avenue, Snohomish, Washington, 98290. I'm so bummed right now that I don't have a living room address. But I do live within about 3 miles here of Lake Tai, and it's very close to home. I'm a father, and I'm a wakeboarder, and I'm a youth leader at Young Life here in the Snohomish County area. I'm going to Malibu, British Columbia, this weekend, and that's a Young Life retreat. Some of you are nodding your head yes. I think you might have heard of it or seen it. It's gorgeous up there, and high school students all throughout this country, but throughout the Northwest, get to go up there and have the best week of their life. One of the activities up there is wakeboarding, and they don't have the best week of their life because of wakeboarding, but it is one of the central activities that go on up there because they don't get to do it all the time. It's huge for them. It's very exciting to get to go out there and have those opportunities, and I'm really excited for Monroe that you're considering providing people here with that same opportunity. I think that this cable park has the potential to be one of Monroe's finest assets. Lake Tai makes sense to me. You have soccer fields, and baseball fields, tennis courts, and playground. You have restaurants. And this just seems to suit that well, that same spirit of outdoor activity. And I was really pleased with the photos that we got to see tonight, how unobtrusive those towers are, that you even got to go see and hear and experience the environment at the OWC Cable Park down in Orlando. It's right for Monroe. It's right for Snohomish County. I can't believe that we don't have one up here in Washington yet with as much boating that goes on. But this is a trend that we will see expanding throughout the state. And just really pleased that we've come this far to consider it. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. David Garrison. 30410 188th Place Southeast, Monroe, Washington. Right now, I'm speaking currently on behalf of mainly the Monroe High School ASB as well as the student youth of Monroe. And I feel that this is a very good program that's going on. And even though it's a private business, they're giving back to the economy of Monroe. And I know that the lake, it gives a place of serenity for the people of Monroe, mostly Frylands, homeowners, but freshman year I did Monroe High School cross country, and part of our routine was to run around Lake Tai in the summer, and we would go out there at 7:30 in the morning and we would run for 2 hours, and I was a pretty good runner, I was decent. I could only run around the lake about 4 or 5 times, and the plan that they're proposing is going to be a good portion of the lake, but with the steel that they've proposed as well as the painting scheme, it could camouflage into the lake in the background, and the lake is a very big place, and going around Sockeyes and back towards Highway 2, I feel that you can still have that experience going out in the morning, seeing the sunrise, even at late at night, and the sunset. You are back far enough away, walking the dogs, whatever you like to do. You don't have to deal with the noise that may arise from boards on water and from a tow cable. And I feel that that this really would help youth, because honestly, you know, on a summer afternoon, the only thing that we get to do is go to the movies. And this is something that would be a lot of fun. And I feel that, you know, I know that there was rumors of a bowling alley, and I was stoked. I was like, that's awesome. I get something to do in the afternoon or at night. And this is something that I would definitely go to, maybe even buy a season pass. I'm not a very good wakeboarder, but I sure would commit myself. And I honestly think that this would really help out, not only in getting teens to come together, but also in the overall economy of Monroe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Mario Garza. I live at 15827 274th Avenue, Southeast Monroe. I just moved here from Snohomish. I've been a Snohomish County resident my whole life. I love Monroe. I love the Frylands. Being a Frylands resident, I think it's great that it would have a positive impact on the youth in the community, the whole county. These things are rare, but they're very cool. I just think it would be a very positive thing to put into the county, to put into the city. I'd love to see it go in. I really like the fact that it cleans up the lake a little bit. I'll keep this short. I would love to see it go in. And, good job on the presentation. Really, really appreciate it. And thanks for hearing me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Carrie Jenneran. I live at 12333 251st Avenue Southeast in Monroe, Washington. And I am a citizen of Monroe in strong favor of the Wakeboard Eagle Park. And I just want to speak to just what a wonderful place Lake Tai is, with the fact that there's a four-lane road next to it, an industrial rock masonry park on one end, parking lots. It is an industrial area, and I just don't want you to forget that the improvements that have been made to it are wonderful. And my hope, my perspective, and my opinion, this would add to that improvement, taking something that is industrial-like and make it even more accessible to a larger crowd of people. And that is what a public park is indeed for, is meeting as many demographics as possible to add pleasure to their lives and not discriminating against any of those groups. We have the possibility to add it with a lot of background information, a lot of research, and I just want to speak to some of the additions that I would add. The improvement to the water. All these we've just heard, but just what stood out to me. The safety for swimmers by having the buoy. It's adding improvements to Lake Tai on H3O's dime. So it doesn't seem to not make sense to me to benefit from their willingness to take a site and make it an even better place for the community of Monroe. There's going to be rentals on site for kids who don't own a wakeboard, so they don't have to go buy the equipment. There's viewing areas, there's grassy areas added, there's improvements to the shoreline. And I just might add that I've been water skiing. Number one, it speaks to my passion. I love to water ski. And I've researched I'm part of the Lake Stevens Water Ski Club and have been for several years. And what a great thing that's been for my family. I've looked into, because of my individual love for it, of what I can do and what I can afford to do. And just, there's a private lake in between Monroe and Marysville. To be a member of that lake is $4,000 a year, and it's not in my budget and my family's budget of four young kids. So I've done a lot of research. It is an insanely expensive sport to do, just like skiing, a lot of them, but when you're passionate about it, you find a way to do it. I found a way for my family to do it, but I would love to have the accessibility. I would also personally love to coach kids and to teach them how to wakeboard and water ski. I would give up my time, I would volunteer, do anything that I could to get the kids on the water and develop in them what it's developed in me as a young girl on a recreational lake that fell in love with the sport at 8 years old. I could only do it when I was offered an opportunity by a friend who owned a boat. And so I can't imagine having the privilege of being on the water really as much as you like during the summer times with minimal cost. The cost that they were mentioning is just out of this park affordable in this industry. And they've really gone the extra mile to make it a benefit to our community. And when I hear the things that they're talking about, it really is above and beyond what this park could offer and how they're making it really fitting with the Lake Tai area. also amazing prices, local discounts. All those are just they're generous offers, and I believe that we would be absolutely foolish to not look at it as a boost to the economy and also just an amazing opportunity for the youth. And I would do my part to volunteer whatever I could to help that youth benefit from that facility as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Todd Neer, and I'm probably traveled the furthest. I live at 5102 Perry Drive Southeast in Auburn, Washington. It's funny, you know, I hear a lot of stuff about the youth. I'm 46, I'm going to be 47, and I love wakeboarding. I heard the story about the 65-year-old man, and so I'm here to testify. A dream came true for me about 7 or 8 years ago. I ended up winning the Northwest Regionals wakeboard competition at Copert Lake. I subsequently I got sponsored by No Fear and Samson Sports Tower. So I was very fortunate. I spent a lot of time, and I traveled to Florida, and I spent a lot of time at OWC. And the thing that, and this is what I'm here really to testify about, is that, you know, as a city council member, you may not know a lot about the sport, or you may not know a lot about the people that do it. And you might think to yourself, there's going to be a bunch of rowdy kids. And what I'm here to testify is that when I was at OWC, granted it was October and it was in the middle of the week, but your average age of the rider there was in their mid-30s. It wasn't a bunch of 12 to 16-year-old kids. There was a lot of men that have families and, you know, that are grown. And so, you know, it's the age group, I think, don't think of that, you know, the park's going to be full of 15-year-old, you know, kids doing graffiti. You know, it's going to be responsible adults as well as kids. And, you know, my daughter, before I left, she's going to college, and she said, "Dad, you know, go to the meeting and try and pull it through, so me and my friends will have something to do." It's a 45-minute drive, and I think what's also being missed is that, you know, this is going to be the only park in the Pacific Northwest there's going to be people, and it's going to benefit the community. You know, there's going to be people in those houses that are unrented will probably get rented right away. I really do think it'll be a big benefit for the community, and I don't plan on taking the whole 5 minutes, so thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
My name is Tim Bailey. I live at 153-51 167th Avenue Southeast in Monroe, about 3 blocks from the grade school over there. I have more questions than I have comments tonight. For one thing, when is the land use notice going to go up on this project? Shouldn't there be a land use notice down there by the park that says this is what's in the works here for this place? I mean, when is the public going to be educated about this? Because really, this is the only forum I've noticed where anybody gets any information. I've followed the papers all winter long. Very, very little information is in the public. So many people don't even know about this yet. And here you are, 2 or 3 weeks away from possibly voting on a contract. When does the public get to fully put in their input? I mean, you've had a handful of people every night I've been here, but aren't you going to let the people know about this? Give the entire community a chance to have some input on this? It's everybody's park. I mean, Jeff Sachs told me last month on the phone that there'd be a land use notice going up in the month of May, and I drove by there tonight. There's still nothing there. And I've walked up to people, strangers in the park, just recently, and asked them if they knew anything about this, and the people who are using the park still don't know that this is coming. A lot of them. So, when are we going to tell the people? Is this a done deal, or are you guys? Do you not care what the public as a whole thinks? I mean, think about the people that voted you into office and give them all a chance to tell you what they think. I mean, is that too much to ask? And quite frankly, no offense to you fellows, because you've done a lot of work and effort on this, but if I was a businessman and I owned that piece of property, do you think I'd be going into business with somebody for a few $1,000 a month at 2%, I mean, shouldn't it be at least like a 50-50 deal? Good Lord, we're going to give up such a prized piece of our city, of our community property. Let's get something out of it. Okay. Anyway, I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Eric Solder, and I live at 914 East Lakeshore Drive, Lake Stevens, Washington. So I'm lucky enough to live on a lake, and I know, like, in the summer, I go wakeboarding every day. Like, in the morning, I get up with my dad and my brother, and, like, we all go. It's like a family thing. And, like, it really keeps me out of trouble, because, like, a lot of my friends, they're out late at night, you know, doing stuff they're not supposed to be doing. And, like, I'm like, all right, well, I don't want to go. I'm going to wakeboard in the morning. You should come with. So, like, I feel like the parks in Monroe, it'll really, like, give the youth something really, like, beneficial to do. And, like, it really benefits, like, my overall wellness. Like, it keeps me in really good shape in the summer when, like, usually I just be, like, hanging out on the couch or whatever, watch TV, playing Xbox. So I just feel like it's really good for the youth. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Colin Spradlin at 3512 53rd Avenue in Snohomish. I think it's a great idea. I've been a board sports enthusiast for most of my life, and all of my friends that I've met that I continue to talk to today, I've met through the sports. I think it's a really positive thing for people to do. Like our last speaker just said, it keeps you focused on your body, on what you're doing with yourself, with your time. I think it would be a great focus for kids around here and from in the area. That's about all I can say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Dwight Nelson. I live at 18124 Trombley Road, Snohomish, up above the fairgrounds. My office is in the Lake Tai building. I look out on the lake every morning when I get there to work. It really is. It's really nice and peaceful and serene. And I really like the sounds of this wakeboard park. I really do. I just, again, don't think Lake Tai is the place to have it. If the cabin site is an option, I wish that you guys would consider that instead. I too had a couple questions now. So if they're parking across the street, you got off-site parking? Well, first off, you were saying 15 cars a day, and you were saying that it said 15 cars an hour, which was it that you figured?
15 an hour. 15 an hour. Sorry.
15 an hour. Okay. And so on this off-site parking, are they just going to come running across Crowns Boulevard, or I mean, how far down is the businesses that are going to be
left? We're adding 25 spaces, so you know, obviously most of them park in the additional spaces, hopefully, because there's more than adequate parking there. But we made an agreement with a building across the street for an overflow area, so people would not have to go to any of the adjacent businesses.
Okay, because I do go walking around there every day at lunchtime, and like today, I mean, it was just packed down there with families, lots of kids up there at the playground, and lots of moms, lots of grandparents up there, and again, I think it's a great idea. I'd just like you guys to consider another site, such as the Gavin site. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else who'd like to address council on this or any other subject tonight except for the public hearing? Okay, thank you then. I want to say we appreciate those who have spoken this evening and expressed your opinions and concerns and statements and support for the items that you spoke of, and always are grateful for the citizens' participation and input into the process. With that said, we are going to move on from the comments from citizens onto our next agenda item, which is a public hearing. But before we do that, I will allow a 3-minute break for those who would like to leave the council chambers at this time. if you so like wish to do so. So we'll take 3 minutes and come back in the session. All right, thank you. Okay, we're back in session here, and we're moving on to a public hearing this evening. Public hearing is on the extension of the moratorium on cannabis collective gardens.
In December, the City Council instituted a moratorium on the placement of medical cannabis collective gardens within the City of Monroe, and that moratorium was good for 6 months. On advice of the City Attorney's Office, we looked at what is happening in that arena, along with Initiative 502, which is on the ballot in the fall, and also some Supreme Court decisions that are supposed to be coming down soon. And rather than imposing regulations at this time to have them redo them when these cases are heard, it's our recommendation that we extend the moratorium for another 6 months. And then during that time, either things will come up and we can do some new regulations, or we might have to extend it again depending on what happens at the initiative and the upcoming court cases. So, and if you notice, the ordinance has been modified slightly since the one that you got in the council packet on Friday. It's in front of you, and it's also available on the website. So if you have any questions, I would be happy to attempt to answer them.
Any questions for Brad at this time? Okay, then we'll open up the this portion of the public hearing for public comment, citizen testimony. First, I want to state for the record that we did receive a letter from Sherry Swenson, and we will place that into the record. But I also have copies here for council for them to read. I don't have anybody signed up to speak specifically on this subject, but as always, if there's anyone in the audience who would like to address council on the moratorium on cannabis collective gardens, you may do so by approaching the podium and giving your name and address for the record. Also, I'll ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes as well. Anybody would like to address council on the subject matter this evening? Okay, with that said then, I entertain a motion to close the public testimony or citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
So move.
Second.
Right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Gamble to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any questions with regards to the amended ordinance for either Brad or for City Attorney Lell? If not, we would. There's a couple things here. We would need a motion to suspend council rules requiring a second reading of the ordinances. Of the ordinance.
We have to close the public hearing first.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Councilmember Hamford.
I'd like to make a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second.
All right. Motion sustained by Councilmember Davis, seconded by Councilmember Camp to close the public hearing. Councilmember Hamford. You have another question or comment?
No, I'm going to keep
Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Councilmember Hamford?
I'd like to make a motion to suspend council rules requiring a second reading of ordinances.
Second.
The motion has been made by Councilmember Hamford, seconded by Councilmember Gearing to suspend council rules requiring a second reading of the ordinance. Any other questions or comments? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Keep going. Okay, Councilmember Hammond.
I'd like to make a motion to accept as first and final reading the ordinance number 012-2012, renewing the moratorium on the establishment of medical cannabis collective gardens for an additional 6 months.
Second. Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Herring to accept this first and final reading ordinance 012-2012, renewing the moratorium on the establishment of medical cannabis collective gardens for an additional 6 months. And for the record, we'll have the city attorney read the official ordinance title.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ordinance number 012-2012, an ordinance of the City of Monroe, Washington, renewing a 6-month moratorium on the establishment of medical cannabis collective gardens, adopting findings in support thereof, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date.
Okay, any other questions or comments for staff, city attorney, or the audience? Okay. I'm seeing no lights or hearing no comments. We'll take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Gamble? Anything for extended agenda?
I didn't see it in there.
Okay.
Somebody missed it.
I didn't look at it. All right. Moving on then to the consent agenda. Anything to be pulled this evening? Well, then we'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp, seconded by Councilmember Gamble to approve the consent agenda. Oh, Davis. What? You know what?
He's always cut back here.
I hear a voice over there. Any further than this gentleman? It was Councilmember Davis. I'm sorry. All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And motion passes. Okay. Moving on to new business item number one, ordinance amending 2012 budget. John, Jake, you weren't here earlier, were you?
I'm just a little late, but thank you for pointing that out to everybody.
Hey, I just want to recognize you.
I'll be back for 3 or 4 hours, I guess.
Good night, gentlemen. Diane.
Okay, in your packets is the cover sheet and the attachments to the ordinance to amend the budget. There's basically two parts to it. The first part is the beginning fund balances. When we made the budget last year, of course, we had to estimate what we thought the beginning fund balances were. Now that the year's started, we know exactly what they are. And so it's more of a housekeeping item to get the beginning fund balances in line so that we have a more accurate estimate on our ending fund balance. And the other part are just various tweaks and changes. As time goes on, things change. The budget's always a fluid thing. And there are some of the big dollar ones are, for instance, on a construction project, the wastewater treatment plant, we're moving along, and they had spread the budget out over a few years, and they now want to move $1 million that they were going to spend in 2013. They want to move it up to 2012, so we're bringing over $1 million. And that budget, that project is all funded by bond revenues that we received in 2011. So we already have the money. It's just when we're allocating it to be spent. The other part is the activity that's gone on with the North Kelsey funds. Because of the lawsuit with the Friends of North Kelsey, there's been we expect there to be a delay in the land closing with the Sabie Walmart. This is causing us to not be able to meet our debt service on the GO bonds for the North Kelsey property, which means that we have to refinance our bonds. And so this budget amendment takes the sale out of the budget that we had originally put in. And it also it takes out the principal payment of the 2010 bonds that we had budgeted as well. And so Exhibit A is the detailed listing of all the changes to the budget, and I have it grouped by fund. And Patsy Cutterback, Councilmember Cutterback, mentioned that for future budgets, I'll also put in another column that says whether or not the item is a revenue or an expenditure or fund balance increase or decrease. So you'll be able to readily see rather than having to read the description on every single one and try to figure it out. If you like, I can go through these one by one. I don't know if you've had a chance to read them all or not. If you want me to just entertain questions about any particular ones, I can go either way, whichever you want.
Awesome. That's very good.
Thank you. Diane, I went through this line by line, and you answered my questions in the Finance Committee meeting, so I'm content with maybe just seeing if Council has questions over particular items, but not necessarily okay. Going through it line by line. That's my preference.
As a matter of record, the Finance Committee did meet prior to this evening's meeting, and was there anything from that meeting that you would like to share with regards to the budget amendment or any other discussion items that you might have had?
Mainly we were talking about the differences in the ending fund balance of the general fund. Exhibit B, if you look at on the first line, general fund at the very right where it says amended restricted fund balance and amended undesignated, you'll see that the undesignated fund balance is changing from $305,000 to $154,000. And the main differences of that is a reduction of $92,000 in revenues from the permit fees that we would have seen from Walmart had the land sale go through this year. And again, the delay because of the lawsuit. And $25,000 is being moved from a designated fund balance to restricted fund balance per request by the police department for photo enforcement monies they want to hold aside and not have it just spent on general activities. And then about $33,000 of that difference is also just the net effect of the increases and decreases to expenditures and revenues. And that makes up the difference between the 154 and the 305.
Council, anything else for Diane? Councilor here.
Thanks. I've been through this a couple times where we have to do this each year, so I appreciate you. These numbers essentially to make it more accurate, so I appreciate the exercise that we need to go through here. One of the other things we talked about a little bit was the debt refinancing, and I'm assuming that'll be in the weeks ahead that we'll be talking about that. Rather than tonight, I don't think you wanted to get into that.
Well, I handed out to each of you a sheet talking about the cost of the debt refinancing. Mayor, did you want me to talk about that during the staff reports or right now?
Councilmember Gearing has brought that up. I think it's appropriate with regards to your earlier statement on the...
you all have a sheet like this in front of you, and this is just kind of sums up what we have to do with the refinancing. The box at the top left of the sheet, that's our original 2010 bonds for the North Kelsey project, North Kelsey land, excuse me. And originally when we realized that because of the lawsuit, the sale wasn't going to go through this summer as planned, I was under the impression that we had to refinance, and in bond speak it means refund the entire debt issue. And so that would have been very expensive for us. Fortunately, after talking to our underwriter, D.A. Davidson, he found a way. He said that we could just refund just the $6.5 million that's due in 2012 and not refund the $4.8 that's due in 2015. So right below that box is the new debt service schedules if we do the refunding. And you can see that the $6.5 million principal that's due in 2012 now becomes 6.575 due in 2015. That additional $75,000 is to cover the costs of the refinancing, the refunding, and that covers our underwriter fee, our bond counsel fee, issuance fees, printing costs, all the costs that are associated with doing the bond issue. And then you also see that in the original issue, the 6.5 was carrying an interest rate of 1.2%. with the refunding, it'll carry an interest rate of 1.4%. The 1.4% is still ridiculously low. So if we move right now, we can take advantage of the really low rates. It's a little bit higher than what we were having, but you know, you do what the market thinks. And so the 4.8 million remains the same at 2%. So over to the right side at the bottom, that yellow box, that's the cost, additional cost it's going to cost us for doing this refinancing. In the year 2012, we actually saved $17,000 because we're deferring our payments. But each year, you can see it's an additional $92,000, and then in 2015, it's an additional $167,000. If the property, if the lawsuit goes to the appellate court in a year and a half or so, their agenda's out a year and a half right now, we think, and if it gets done sooner, we have an early call feature on our bonds, which means that if in 2013 or 14 this whole thing gets settled, we could, if the land deal goes through, we could call the bonds early then, and it would save us some money. It would save us some of that future cost, yeah, a significant amount. So that's why I have it lined up year by year instead of just the whole total of $333,000. And at the very top, I just put in the cash on hand just for full disclosure so you can see how much money we have right now in the backup for those two funds. And then the box right above the yellow box, that's the new debt service if you combined the 6.5 plus the 4.8 together. But anyway, this just kind of gives you a little summary of the additional cost for refinancing.
So there is good news in this. A few months ago, when Diane had done her analysis and from information that she had gathered, it appeared that the impacts to the city were going to be extremely significant.
Millions of dollars.
Which was terrifying at the time. It's still not an easy pill to swallow, quite frankly, the fact that we're having to refund these loans. But we are able to take advantage of, quite frankly, a market that is very, favorable to the city at this point. Now, some could look at that on a global terms and say, uh-oh, we're in trouble if the interest rates are down that low. We're going to look at this very optimistically and say, thank goodness interest rates are down that low. So there is some, if you want to use the term, a silver lining in all this, is that what would appear to be potential millions is now a third of that. But nonetheless, we are still going to have an impact as a result of the lawsuit, and that's what's laid out here for you tonight. Any questions for Diane with regards to this?
Councilmember Scarry. So the time frame for redoing this then? When we can expect it. Sooner than later, you know, take advantage
sooner.
Of
it. Sooner. We have to move because of the market. And so May 21st, the underwriters are going to send to me their request for information. And I have to have all it's a slew of financial stuff that they want to know. And I have to have it back to them by May 31st. And what you guys need to know, there are a whole bunch of things go along with the preliminary official statement, but what you guys are interested in is the first reading is going to be in June 19th, the first ordinance reading. The final ordinance, the second ordinance reading will be July 10th, and the actual bond sale will be July 31st.
Great. That's what I want. Thank you very much.
If everything goes according to schedule.
Sure.
All right, anything else for Diane? Okay, so Diane, the recommended action that you'd like to see tonight is a motion to accept this first reading of the amending the 2012 budget to account for actual beginning fund balances and new revenues and expenditures.
Yes, please.
Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right, the motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Any other comments, questions? Oh, do we have official?
Here's the official pen now.
there's an ordinance, do we have to read the title?
No.
All right. Okay, then we will take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, moving along then, we are on to new business item number two, and that is a request to authorize the mayor to sign the senior center ground lease extension. And Administrator Brad.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, several months ago, the senior center came before staff and was looking to extend their lease. They've been looking at getting grants and those types of things, and because they're coming towards the end of their lease that they are under currently, it ends in 2014, they're having difficulty securing grants, that type of thing, because of the uncertainty. So one of the things that they had asked for is the possibility of a 40-year lease. Working with the city attorney, we haven't really dove into that, but it doesn't appear at first blush that there is anything precluding the city from doing such a long contract. However, that is abnormal for us. Normally, we land around a 20-year contract. In addition to that, after legal review, this original document is many years old and wasn't put together by our current attorney law firm. And so what we're looking at is going back and possibly putting a whole new lease agreement together, something that's up to date, that is both represents the city's interests along with the senior center's interests. This evening, we do have Mr. Bill Davison in the audience from the senior center. If there's any questions of the center itself, and then I just am seeking basically support of council should you guys want to move forward with extending that lease. So basically, that's what I'm looking for this evening, is kind of consensus on that, and if there's any comments on the lease term, 20 years versus 40 years.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have a question. You said that the, as far as the attorney thought, there was no harm in doing the 40-year. I mean, have you guys had discussions on the pros and cons of 20 versus 40?
We have not, other than 40 years is a long time. However, that being said, the senior center does produce a good public service to the community. It's a needed service, so it's a little different than, you know, let's say the cable park, for example, that we talked about earlier.
Very briefly, Mr. Mayor, I have actually looked into that specific issue. City Administrator and I have discussed it very briefly tonight, but one potential option as the council conceptualizes this and we move forward is to consider, if you would like a longer lease term, establishing that as a baseline, but also allowing contractual offering that the city would be able to terminate that lease if there was some compelling public reason, if you needed the property, the underlying ground for something else. You could have a specified list of acceptable grounds that would allow you to terminate and still have the base lease a much longer period. So that's just one option that you might want to consider as we go forward.
Councilmember Hampton.
Do we know if 40-year lease will help with grants over a 20-year lease? Or
I don't have that information. Maybe Bill.
Would you like me to speak to that?
Please.
Yes. My name is Bill Davison. I'm on the board of the East County Senior Center, and I live at 611 West Main Street for the last 48 years. The reason that we've asked for 40 years is that if we go in for capital grants, grant givers want to be sure that we have our ducks in a row as far as the land goes. We would not ask for 40 years end to end. I mean, we certainly can do renewals of 10 years or whatever. We just need to show grant providers that we do have the property under contract for that period of time.
The city also in the lease, I'm sure, there is a clause in the lease now, a clawback of the land if we abandon the building, if the senior center were to go under any number of reasons. The city, it reverts to the city. It's your building. So we would like at least to be considered for that period of time. Right now we're looking 20 years in the future and trying to determine what our position will be, what we will have to offer the city. And we know that 20 years from now we need some more facility, and it will have to come from grants. Any other questions?
How'd the sale go this weekend?
Pardon?
How'd the sale go this weekend?
Oh, it went great. We made a little money. The plant club made, the garden club made $2,000, which paid for their scholarships this year. It was good. We probably had 200 people there last weekend. We service about 1,800 people every month, and we have 650 members, many of which are Monroe residents. Some live outside the city, but we provide a big-time service for the community. So, and we want to thank you very much for the last 20 years. You've been our partner in giving these services, and we look forward to another 40 years with you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hanson.
I'm all for stability, and for 40 years, or 20 years plus two options and 10 on top of that would help with the grants. Sounds like the way to go. I want to get more feedback from what the other council members think, but.
Okay. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I would agree. I think 20 years ensures that the mayor can use it, but 40 ensures I can use it, so. I didn't know 40 years had presented itself until tonight. So it was a great opportunity. Got to take a swing.
Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Well, I think City Administrator Brazel has some direction, and together with Attorney Bell, we'll bring that something back to council here shortly. So.
Thank you. And I just want to say that 20 years goes quick, because I used to read the water meter at the old senior center and help put the utilities in for the existing ones. So 20 years is here and gone before you know it.
I know. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, Council, your opportunity for anything that you might want to report at this time. And we'll just go around the table. Councilmember Geary.
Not tonight. Thank you.
Councilmember Cadda.
In the Herald yesterday, there was an article about the Everett City Councilperson, Drew Nielsen, and I sat with him on the Snohomish County Health District Board, and I just think we should take a moment of silence to remember him by. He was a great council member, a great member of that board, very thoughtful, sincere, intelligent. Just had a great willingness to serve, so I know that he will be missed, and my thoughts and prayers go out to his family. So if we could just take a moment to recognize him.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. We'll let you take us in and take us out.
Yeah, Finance Committee met tonight, and we are probably one meeting away, I think, from having a reserve policy to bring back to the council. So,
great. Councilor Kent.
Nothing for me today.
Councilor Miller. Councilor Gamble.
Yes, I didn't get a chance to talk to you before the meeting tonight, but I did get an email from Matthew Campbell, who's a resident of Monroe. He's also the Special Events and Corporate Relations Manager for Northwest Harvest. He was writing to let us know that, that the spring, they're changing things up a bit. They usually do two big food drives for Northwest Harvest each year. Probably most of you folks know it's on the news or King 5 all the time. So they changed it up a bit. They're going to be broadcasting live from malls. We were shooting live from four schools that are part of the Rachel's Challenge program. And for those that are not familiar with Rachel's Challenge, it's all about bullying in school. And there's a whole theme and program around that. And basically, he was able to talk King 5 into shooting live from Chain Lake Elementary. They will be there from 6 to 9 a.m. The event is June 1st, and we'll be on site from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. collecting food, cash donations, and all the food collected will go to the Sky Valley Food Bank. So just a great opportunity for a food bank for us here locally. And he was right. I will forward this on to all of council. Mayor wanted to know, we want to participate as a city entity. I know I'm going to take this back to my business and see what we can do locally to plug in, for you, otherwise. So I wanted to make sure I brought that, bring that up. I just got the email yesterday and just hadn't had the time to send it forward.
Well, appreciate you sending that forward to all the council and staffs at our city administrator why don't we consider placing that on June 1st? Is what, 3 weeks?
Yeah,
3 weeks.
Wait.
Well, we don't have a new meeting. So,
I just sent it right now to the council.
Great. Since you're the only one with a tablet, we're all going to get it at 11 o'clock tonight. So, well, let's shoot from the hip here a little bit. What would you recommend?
I think it would be great if we had. It's my kids go to school there, so it's logical. I'm going to try to participate in person. I would love to have some sort of representation from the city. I think Northwest Harvest is very well established. In the Puget Sound area, their program was involved when I was in high school. They would go down and sing at it. The big one, and the other big one is at Christmas time. They have a big show they've done there, so. I will definitely be participating, but it would be great if there were any other council members that could, whether it be even you, Mr. Mayor, or even you or somebody, rope into that. And you'd be conducting, there's going to be some on-air stuff from on-site there, so it's a great opportunity, and maybe Lincoln County and Beth Reed, obviously the PTA is going to be heavily involved from Chain Lake.
Well, I'd be glad to talk to you about it more.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't mean. No, absolutely. I know the. I think it'd be great. So we can talk about that more in terms of my personal interaction from the city's perspective. I think it might be valuable if we put something into a shorter announcement, and we can place that on the city's website. If council is in agreement,
I'm sure
with that.
Sure.
Good. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Councilmember Hepburn.
Two things. The first thing I wanted to just address and ask about the land use notice that was Mr. Bailey, I think, was asked about earlier. I remember specifically seeing the land use notice for quite a while, and it's not there anymore, like you stated. So I don't know, how that disappeared, but I would ask if that's something we should be reposting. I would think we should until the vote is taken on action. That's the first item. Second item was I got the privilege to attend the Sky Valley Young Life Auctions this last weekend. And that was a great time of raising money for Young Life to help the youth of Monroe and the Sky Valley area. So say at all. It's good to see community coming together again.
I'll add that my wallet is a little lighter because of the auction as well.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to staff reports. Mr. Sachs, anything this evening? Ben?
Yes.
Mike?
I'll mention a couple things. Thank you. One is today, and also Thursday, is the Monroe High School election. Several high schools, girls' fast pitch districts, as well as Skyward Park. So we're proud to host that for the area. There are a lot of games going on. Weather's great. And the second thing is, it was mentioned earlier about the the Garden Club having their plant sale. And not only does it raise funds for the scholarships they offer, but also for the donation they make to the community. $500 for the flowers for downtown. They made a donation. Republic Services made a $500 donation, and Walmart made a $1,000 donation. Well, anyways, tomorrow, volunteers from the Garden Club and myself will be potting up flowers for downtown. So, so you'll see that, a lot of furious activity.
Diane, anything else?
Nope, nothing else.
Chief?
Nothing.
Okay. Brad? City Administrator Brad?
I just want to clarify on the actual posting, land use posting. We haven't had an application actually submitted to the city as of yet. And so that's what generates a public hearing notice. So just so there's clarity on that. As soon as we get information, we post it on the city's website. We try and make it as visible as possible. We actually got a call from one of our local papers, I believe it was yesterday, directed them instantly to the website. As soon as we got the updated information, it goes on there. So anyway, we're doing what we can in that aspect. But as far as a public hearing notice, there wasn't anything posted because we don't actually have an application as of yet. So I just want to clarify that.
Councilmember Henry.
So just to clarify, because I'm getting asked these questions, besides Mr. Baird. So we're saying possibly June 5th will be the first reading. And so just procedural wise, if they turn in the application June 1st, then can you go into the procedure what days the signs will go up for the land use and the public hearing and so forth?
So, well, I mean, there's a whole process laid out in both state law and the Monroe Municipal Code. So we have to see if they submitted. There's a 28-day period to see if their application is complete. And after we issue that notice of completion, then we have 15 days to publish a notice of application in the newspaper. And then depending on what they're applying for, in which order, it depends on whether or not there will be a public hearing. So we don't know what their plan for applications are yet, so we can't say when actual notices will go up. But, and it's like their presentation they just did is already on the website. So as soon as we get stuff, it goes out there. So,
I think what's may need some clarification if we made from the city attorney is the difference between the agreement that we'll be talking about possibly on the 5th. An actual application process for development. Those are two different things, and I believe that the agreement will have as part of it the requirements to meet the application parameters, or they'll have to make application and successfully fulfill all of the requirements within that application. And it's during those application portion or periods that public So, I might have just explained it, but
that's exactly how I would explain it. And again, to reiterate the distinctions between the proposed lease or concessionaire agreement that the city will be considering for adoption in June, which is the landlord-tenant relationship that you would choose to enter if that's your preference on one hand. And that doesn't require any technical public posted notice because you're operating in your proprietary capacity as landowner. On the other hand, there are any number of environmental or regulatory approvals that may need to be obtained by the applicants in order to actually construct their facility and use the property. And to the extent that any of those require a public hearing, that's something the city will have to hold. To the extent that they're going to require specific notice procedures, whether it's posted notice, published notice, mailed notice to the adjacent property owners, all of those procedural requirements will be satisfied through the city's review and approval process. And as Brad said, there's a different process depending on which type of permits and approvals are being applied for.
Thank you for clarifying.
Before you move on to that, I would like to say that this weekend for me was very busy. I began on Friday morning. Councilmember Hedebeck and I were invited to attend a leadership conference, I guess, for high school students up at Monroe High. We were part of a panel that provided, from our perspective, responses and input as it relates to leadership. I felt that the process was very, very, very good. And the students' response to the panel that I spoke to afterwards were very impressed with the number or with the members of the panel. Some were more interested in one answer than others. I won't go into that one, but I was just thanked for not bringing the subject up. And the gal was talking about the mail.
Oh.
Yeah. That was an interesting answer. You'll have to listen to the tape on that one. But it was very, very good weekend, or a very good event, and I think that was profitable in the sense that I believe it stirred some folks, kids up at the high school, into the direction of wanting to step up into roles of leadership, either within amongst their peers or within the community. And so, very well done, and appreciate being part of that. I also had the pleasure of participating in and judging the lip sync. I've been a judge now for like, I don't know how many, half a dozen times here in the last 6 months. That was a load of fun. I'm telling you, it was awesome. I wasn't sure what to expect from the lip sync contest, but if members of the audience and members of council, if you've not gone to participate in that or be in the audience for that, you're missing out. That was absolutely a fun evening. So I did have a request that myself and other council members perform next year. We'll see. that we'll have a year to talk about. Two items that I was able to participate in over the weekend, and of course a very belated wish to all the moms in the audience and chambers today. Happy Mother's Day. City Administrator Ruff.
Thank you, Mayor. Draft agenda, June 5th, 2012. Under public hearings, we have the 6-year transportation improvement program, 2013-2018. Number 2, comprehensive plan amendments. We've got the consent agenda, and under new business, we have a tentatively scheduled authorized mayor to sign lease agreement with H3O Cable Park. Number 2, discuss address changes. We have the draft agenda for June 12th, 2012. Any additions or deletions?
We may have something to add to that. That may come out of the conversation that Councilmember Camp and Ben and myself will have. That's related to the leaders program or the camera. Would you
have student representative?
Student representative. So we may have something to add there just for discussion purposes, or we might following your decision. and City Attorney Lau, if you would mind the description of the purpose of the executive session and the time of the meeting, we will need to see.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The purpose of the executive session is to discuss a potential litigation with legal counsel pursuant to RCW 4230110-1I, and also to discuss the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease pursuant to RCW 4230110-1C. The executive session will last approximately 10 minutes, and the council may take action.
All right, before we go, Councilmember
Kibbe. Thank you. Gene, the comprehensive plan amendments on two, is that first there? Is it the three that we covered?
It's all
four, right?
Kelsey, split it into first four, there.
And then just miscellaneous ones. You split it into four ordinances.
Okay.
The last meeting.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's so all, it covers all of those.
Yeah.
Public hearing on
yeah.
all those. Okay, thank you.
It's already on the website, looks like.
Yep. Yeah.
Which, by the way, really good. That's great.
Second.
Okay, with that said then, we will now go into executive session for approximately 10 minutes. Okay, all right, we are back in session. And Councilmember Hamford.
I'd like to make a motion to close the meeting.
Second. All right. Motion has been made by Councilmember Hamford and seconded by Councilmember Gearing to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.